Greetings, everyone, and welcome to The Law Hour, an editorial review. The Law Hour is sponsored by Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law Hour, an editorial review, please visit my webpage. It's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you important information about law, news, and current events. Stay tuned for tonight's special report on billions for the bankers, debts for the people, right after this. You know, we Americans may hold the dubious honor of being the most litigious people in the world, but when it comes to law, we seem to be among the most ignorant. Today, most Americans feel powerless to resist these evils that we see perpetrated against our liberties, privacy, and property by the powerful government agencies, multinational corporations, lobbies, and the news media. But, you know, we don't have to remain helpless. The institution that was created by God and incorporated into our Constitution and Bill of Rights is called the judicial power. The courts are the proper repository for the protection of our rights, liberties, and property. That doesn't reside in Congress or the political process. Now, did you know that the privilege against self-incrimination, for instance, is neither accorded to the passive resistant nor to the person who is ignorant of his rights, not to one who's indifferent thereto? And that's because it's a fighting clause. Its benefits can be retained only by sustained combat. Your rights cannot be claimed by your attorney or solicitor. Your rights are valid only when insisted upon by you, the belligerent claimant in person. Now, that comes from a case called U.S. versus Johnson, and that's why I contend that we should listen more to the judges and less to the politicians and the lawyers. Now, did you hear what that judge said? He said, your rights cannot be claimed by your attorney or solicitor. Your rights are claimed by you, the belligerent claimant in person. Now, if you'd like to learn more about courtroom strategy and procedure and rights, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967 and ask for the free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, just go to the website georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Click on to the email. Send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we've been looking at this thing called billions for the bankers, debts for the people. Last time, we were up to the political process. Why is it that Congress, the President, and the various bureaucracies don't protect us from the monetary system that's been created by the Federal Reserve banking system? Could it be that the politicians are a part and parcel with the problem and don't have anything close to do with the solution? I know that from the time I was a little kid, we've been talking about vote the bad guys out and vote the good guys in. What I've never been able to figure out is who are the good guys and who are the bad. Is it Ted Kennedy? Is he a bad guy? Arlen Specter? He's a Republican. Is he a good guy? It doesn't seem to make any difference whether Republicans are in the White House or Democrats. We run budget deficits every year. It doesn't make any difference whether Republicans or Democrats control the Congress. They spend more than they take in. Now, you and I, sitting here at home, we have to live within our budget. If we make $50,000 a year, we spend $50,000. If we make $40,000, we spend $40,000. We hope to make an extra $10,000 next year so we can spend more, but Congress doesn't care whether they have more or less tax revenue. Right now, as I speak, in the year 2005, they're expecting approximately a $500 billion deficit. Now, if I was expecting a shortfall of $5,000, I would have to contract my spending by $5,000. Congress doesn't. The president doesn't. The fact that they're going to show a $500,000 shortfall in income doesn't faze anybody in Washington. They simply borrow the money and spend it, whether you like it or I like it or anybody else cares about it one way or the other. You ever wonder about that? Why are they doing that? Well, there's a reason. You know, everything has a cause and effect relationship, and people aren't working in a vacuum. And the people in Congress, you know, people like Ted Kennedy and Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, you know, we like to talk about them, you know, and we say, boy, those politicians are really stupid. They can't balance the budget. Well, I'm smarter than they are because I can balance my family budget. Well, those politicians aren't stupid. They're not dumb. They're not doing that for no good purpose. They know exactly what they're doing, and they know why they're doing it. They've got a goal. They've got an agenda. They've got a purpose. And they're making money at it, and at your expense. So, yeah, it's political. Democrat, Republican, and independent voters who have wondered why politicians always spend more tax money than they take in, by now you should be able to see the reason. When politicians begin to study our debt money system, they soon realize that these politicians are not the agents of the people, but are actually the agents of the bankers for whom the politicians plan ways to place the people further in debt. And it takes only a little imagination to see that if Congress had been creating and spending or issuing into circulation the necessary increase in the money supply, there would be no national debt. Furthermore, the $4 trillion of other debts would be practically non-existent, and since there would be no original cost of money except printing, and no continuing costs such as interest, federal taxes would be almost non-existent. Money, once in circulation, would remain there and go on serving its purpose as a medium of exchange for generation after generation and century after century, just as coins do now with no payments to the bankers whatsoever. Now, there was a time in America when we didn't have an income tax. We had plenty of money. Mom stayed home and took care of the kids. Today, mom is out working. 80% of American women are now working in the marketplace. That doesn't strike me as being a wealthier, more abundant, and productive nation. That strikes me as a nation that's getting poorer and poorer, and indeed it is. It takes more and more money to service that debt. And it's not just that debt, it's mounting debts and wars. These wars cost money, and instead of peace and debt-free prosperity, we Americans now have ever-mounting debt and periodic wars. We as a people are now ruled by a system of banker-owned mammon that has usurped the mantle of government, disguised itself as our legitimate government, and then set about to pauperize and control the American people. It's now a centralized, all-powerful political apparatus whose main purposes are promoting war, spending the people's money, and in propagandizing to perpetuate itself in power. Our two large political parties have become its servants. The various departments of government, its spending agencies, and the Internal Revenue System is its collection agency. And unknown to the people at large, this government operates in close cooperation with similar apparatuses in all other nations around the world, which are also disguised as governments. Some, we are told, are friends, some, we are told, are enemies. Enemies are built up through international manipulations and used to frighten the American people into going billions of dollars more into debt to the bankers for military preparedness, foreign aid to stop communism, minority rights, and so on. Citizens deliberately confused by brainwashing propaganda watch helplessly while our politicians give our food, our goods, and our money to banker-controlled alien governments under the guise of better relations and easing tensions. Our banker-controlled government takes our finest and bravest sons and sends them into wars with obsolete equipment and inadequate training, where tens of thousands have been killed over the years and hundreds of thousands crippled, other thousands are morally corrupted, addicted to drugs, and then infected with venereal diseases and other diseases which they bring back to the United States with them from these foreign lands. And when the war is over, we have gained nothing, and we're scores of billions of dollars more in debt to the bankers, which are the reasons for these wars in the first place. Now, the profits from these massive debts have been used to erect a complete and almost hidden economic and political colossus over our entire nation. Now, they keep telling us that they're trying to do us good, when in truth, they work to bring harm and injury to our people. These would-be despots know that it is easier to control and rob an ill, poorly educated and confused people than it is to rob a healthy and intelligent population. So they deliberately prevent real cures for diseases. They degrade our educational system. They dumb us down. And they stir up social and racial unrest. And for the same reason, they favor drug use, alcohol, racial intermarriage, sexual promiscuity, abortion, pornography, and crime. Everything which will debilitate, which will corrupt the minds and the bodies of the people of the United States, is secretly encouraged, as it makes the people less able to oppose them or even to understand what's being done to them. And then family morals, love of country, the Christian religion, all that is honorable is being swept away right before our eyes. While they try to build their new subservient man, our new rulers are trying to change our whole racial, social, religious, and political order. And they will not change the debt money economic system by which they rob and rule. Now, our people have become tenants and debt slaves to the bankers and their agents in the land that our fathers conquered. It is conquest through the most gigantic fraud and swindle in the history of mankind. And we remind you again that the key to the bankers' wealth and power over us is their ability to create money out of nothing and to lend it to us at interest. This is the exact opposite of just weights and balances. God instructed us, thou shalt not steal, you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. And had we followed those principles, we would be healthy, wealthy, and wise. When we followed those economic principles, we Americans became healthy, wealthy, and wise. When we turned our backs on those fundamental biblical principles, we became sick and poor and dumbed down until now we're stupid. We suffer here in America from the terminal stupids. Now, if these bankers had not been allowed to do that, if the bankers and politicians working together had not been allowed to do that, they would never have gained secret control over our nation. Now, how true Solomon's words are. The rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. You'll see that in Proverbs 22, verse 7. Now, God Almighty warned us in the Bible that one of the curses which would come upon us for disobeying his laws was that the stranger that is within our gate shall get up high above us, very high, and you shall come down very low. He shall lend to you, and you shall not lend to him. He shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. Deuteronomy 28, verses 44 and 45. Now, most of the owners of the largest banks in America are of Eastern European ancestry and connected with the Rothschild European banks. Now, has that warning come to fruition in America? Let us now consider the correct method of providing the medium of exchange, that is, the money needed by our economy, needed by our nation. The constitutional way. Every citizen is a stockholder. Now, if we would have used the constitutional way of creating the money needed in our nation, the Federal Congress would spend most of its time and study on the issuance and control of an adequate supply of stable money for the people of America. If an increase of population and production required an increase in the medium of exchange, Congress would authorize the coining or the printing of the determined amount. Some could be used to pay current legitimate expenses of the federal government, with the balance paid directly to the citizens. Records for payments would be similar to Social Security records, except a citizen would be recorded at birth instead of when he first goes to work. Each person on the records as of the date of the congressional authorization would receive an equal amount, just as if he were a stockholder holding one share. Just think, a payment of only $20 to each citizen would put $4 billion of debt-free and interest-free money into circulation. Such a suggestion always scares the bankers, and their propagandists will immediately cry printing press money and warn that it would soon be worthless and would cause inflation. Seems to be all right when the bankers create this money out of thin air and put it into circulation. Shouldn't we call that printing press money? Well, the truth of the matter is that their immense usury charges on their created credit, that's our debt, is the sole cause of inflation. All prices on all industry, trade, and labor must be raised periodically to pay the ever-increasing usury charges. And that's the only cause of higher prices. And the money changers spend millions in propaganda to keep you and I from realizing that simple fact. Now, the money creators, the bankers, know that if we ever tried a constitutional issue of debt-free, interest-free currency, even a limited issue, the benefits would be apparent immediately that they must prevent. Now, Abraham Lincoln was the last president to issue such debt-free and interest-free currency in 1863, and he was assassinated shortly thereafter. Now, under a constitutional system, to provide banks to private banks would exist to rob the people. Government banks, under the control of the people's representatives, would issue and control all of the money and credit. They would issue not only actual currency, but they could lend limited credit at no interest for the purchase of capital goods, such as homes. A $50,000 loan would require only $50,000 in repayment, not $243,941 as it is now. Everyone who supplied materials and labor for the home would get paid just as they do today, but the bankers would not get $213,941 in interest payments. And that's why they ridicule and destroy anyone suggesting government or citizens' money without interest and without debt should be a viable option. Now, history tells us of debt-free and interest-free money issued by government. The American colonies did it in the 1700s, and their wealth soon rivaled England and brought restrictions from Parliament, which led to the Revolutionary War. Abraham Lincoln did it in 1863 to help finance the Civil War. He was later assassinated by an agent of the Rothschild Bank. No debt-free or interest-free money has been issued in America since the Civil War. Several Arab nations issued interest-free loans to their citizens. The Saracen Empire forbade interest on money for 1,000 years, and its wealth outshone even Saxon Europe. Mandarin China issued its own money, interest-free and debt-free, and historians and collectors of art today consider those centuries to be China's time of greatest wealth, greatest culture, and its era of greatest peace. Germany tried issuing debt-free and interest-free money from 1935 and on, accounting for its startling rise from the Depression to a world power in 5 years. Germany financed its entire government and war operation from 1935 to 45 without gold and without debt, and it took the whole capitalist and communist world to destroy the German power over Europe and bring Europe back under the heel of the bankers. Such history of money does not even appear in the textbooks of public government schools today. Issuing money which doesn't have to be paid back in interest leaves the money available to use in the exchange of goods and the exchange of services, and its only continuing cost is replacement as the paper wears out. Money is the paper ticket by which such transfers are made and should always be in sufficient quantity to transfer all possible production of the nation to ultimate consumers. Now, it is as ridiculous for a nation to say to its citizens, "You must consume less because we are short of money," as it would be for an airline to say, "Our planes are flying, but we can't take you because we're short of tickets." Now, money issued in such a way would derive its value in exchange from the fact that it had come from the highest legal source in the nation, and it would be declared to be legal to pay all public and private debts issued by the sovereign nation. Not in danger of collapse, it would need no gold or silver or other so-called precious metals to back it. So as history shows, the stability and the responsibility of the government in issuing to the deciding factor in the acceptance of the government's currency, not gold, not silver, or iron buried in some hole in the ground, proof is America's current currency policy today. Our gold and silver are practically gone, but our currency is accepted. But if the government was about to collapse, our currency would be worthless. Also, money issued through the people's legitimate government would not be under the control of a privately owned corporation whose individual owners benefit by causing the money amount and the value of that money to fluctuate, and the people are then forced into debt. Now, under the present debt usury system, the extra burden of usury forces workers and businesses to demand ever more money for the working goods to pay their ever-increasing debts and taxes. Now, this increase in prices and wages is called inflation. Bankers, politicians, and economists blame it on everything but the real cause, which is the usury levied on money and debt by the bankers. This inflation benefits the moneylenders since it wipes out savings from one generation to the next, so they cannot finance or even help the next generation, and they must then borrow from the moneylenders and then pay a large part of their life, their labor, and their property to these usurers. With an adequate supply of money, free money, interest-free money, little borrowing would be required and prices would be established by people and goods, not by debts and usury. So if the Federal Congress failed to act or acted incorrectly in the supply of money, the citizens would use the ballot or recall petitions to replace those who prevented correct action from others whom the people believe would pursue a better monetary policy. And since the creation of money and its issuance in sufficient quantity would be one of the few functions of Congress, the voters could decide on a candidate by his stand on money, instead of the hundreds and, yes, indeed even thousands of lesser and deliberately confusing subjects which are presented to us today. And since money is and would remain a national function, local differences or local factions would not be able to sway the people from the nation's citizens' interest. All other problems except the nation's defense would be taken care of in the state, county, or city governments where they are best handled and most easily corrected. And an adequate national defense would be provided by the same citizen-controlled Congress, and there would be no bankers behind the scenes bribing politicians to give $200 billion of American military equipment to other nations, disarming us, while alien nations prepare to attack and invade the United States of America. Now think of a debt-free America. There was a time in America when we were debt-free. Andrew Jackson paid off the debt. But you know, when you do that, there's no money, there's no profit to be made in that. So enter the bankers now, and the bankers come up with a plan to make profit and gain at our expense. They took over the Congress, the lawmaking body. Oh, it's true. You get to go to the polls and you get to vote. You can vote for a Democrat or a Republican, but in the final analysis, all of these people hold the same views, the New World Order view. They're still controlled, both sides of the aisle. These multinational corporations give money to both political sides, and they do it at the same time. Now, why is that? I don't give money to organizations that I don't agree with. You probably don't either, but these multinational corporations and the banksters do. So it doesn't make any difference whether it's Bill Clinton or George Bush in the White House. You're going to get more of the same. The solution to the problem is to drop out. You know, when God gave us, thou shalt not steal, it doesn't make any difference if other people steal. You don't have to. When God gave us a law that said, don't have unjust weights and balances in your bag, if other people want to deal in unjust weights and balances, that doesn't mean that you and I have to. So there's a cause and effect relationship. We become the proximate cause of our own injury. I've heard people say to me, well, you know, the Federal Reserve has the only game in town. We have to use Federal Reserve notes and checks and credit cards and buy and sell in dollars because it's the only thing we have. No, it isn't. We have a whole monetary system put out by our Treasury Department in gold and silver coin, and have had since 1986. And before that, all the silver coin was available to us. I got a bag of silver coin the other day. Just to show you what it's worth, the silver coin today is selling for about $5,500 a bag in round numbers, $5,500 a bag. That's about $5.50 per dollar, because there's $1,000 in a bag. $5.50. Yeah, a little over five times the face value of the money. That's what it costs. So the money, that is the Federal Reserve note dollars, the federal money, the government money, is worth five times less. And that's after it's been manipulated and held down with hedge funds and the plunge protection team, also orchestrated by government. The stock market is not a free market. Neither is the NASDAQ or Standard & Poor's. Those are contrived markets. Gold and silver markets, those aren't free markets, those are contrived markets, managed and controlled by bankers. Now, supply and demand is where reality is located. Supply and demand. When you run short of something, the signal to the marketplace is higher prices. When there's an abundance of something in the marketplace, then the market signal is lower prices. Lower prices will move that inventory out of the warehouse. Now that's what productivity, that's what private property is all about. It's the exact opposite to the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and it's predicated upon the 10 commandments, not the 10 planks. Now, with debt-free and interest-free money, there would be no high and confiscatory taxation. Our homes would be mortgage-free with no $10,000 a year payments to the bankers, and nor would they get $1,000 or $2,500 a year from every automobile on our roads. We would need no easy payment plans, revolving charge accounts, loans to pay medical or hospital bills, loans to pay taxes, loans to pay for burials, loans to pay loans, nor any of the 1,001 usury-bearing loans which now suck the lifeblood of American families. There would be no unemployment, divorce, at least divorce caused by debt, destitute old people or mounting crime, and even the so-called deprived classes would be deprived of neither job nor money to buy the necessities of life. Criminals could not become politicians, nor would politicians become criminals in the pay of the money lenders. Our officials at all government levels would be working for the people instead of devising means to spend more money to place the people further into debt to the bankers. We would get out of the entangling foreign alliances that have engulfed us in our four major wars and scores of minor wars since the Federal Reserve Act was passed, alliances which are now used to prevent America from preparing her own defense in the face of mounting danger from alien powers. A debt-free America would mean mothers would not have to work. With mother at home, juvenile delinquency would decrease rapidly. The elimination of the jury, or usury rather, and debt would be the equivalent of a 50% raise in the purchasing power of every worker in America. With this cancellation of all debts, the return to the people of all of the property and wealth that these parasitic bankers and their quasi-legal agents have stolen by usury and fraud, and the ending of their theft of $300 billion and more every year from the people, America would be prosperous and powerful beyond the wildest dreams of its citizens today. We would be in the same position that we were in the 1880s and 90s, and we would be at peace because a biblical example of cancellation of debts to moneylenders and restoration of property and money to our people. You'll see that in Nehemiah 5, verses 1 through 13. It's called the Land Sabbath and Jubilee. Yeah, once every 7 years, God requires, and this is that year, 2005, is a land Sabbath year. It's a year of release. You'll see that in Leviticus chapter 25. Land Sabbaths and Jubilees. But you know, the government never forgives. They keep your record on file forever. And the government never forgives your debt either. In fact, the other day, the Congress and the President just signed it. I saw yesterday this new Bankruptcy Reform Act to make sure that you don't bankrupt out of all of your debt. You can bankrupt out of some of your debt. But we're sure not going to let you bankrupt out of all of your debt. And if there's any means by which you can repay, we're going to make you repay. Well, I guess that's what the American people want. They keep voting for it, don't they? Now, we realize this small and necessarily incomplete article on money may be charged with oversimplification. Some of you may say that if it is that simple, then the people would have known about it, and it could not have happened to us. But this moneylender's conspiracy is as old as Babylon. In fact, it goes back to the Babylonian mystery religion. And even in America, it dates far back before the year 1913. Actually, 1913 may be considered the year in which their previous plans came to fruition and the way opened for complete economic conquest of our people. The conspiracy is old enough in America, so that its agents have been for many years in positions such as newspaper publishers, editors, columnists, church ministers, university presidents, professors, textbook writers, labor union leaders, movie makers, radio and TV commentators, politicians from school board members to U.S. presidents and many others. These are the people that create our policies for us, and we follow along blindly, following the blind, leading the blind. These agents control the information that is available to our people. They manipulate public opinion. They elect whom they will locally, and then they elect who they will nationally, and they never expose the crooked money system in the process. They promote school bonds, municipal bonds, expensive and detrimental farm programs, urban renewal, foreign aid, and many other schemes which will put the people into more and more debt to the bankers. Now, thoughtful citizens wonder why billions are spent on one program and billions on another, which may duplicate that program or even nullify it. You know, programs such as paying home or some farmers rather, not to raise crops while at the same time building dams or canals to irrigate more farmland? Does that sound crazy or stupid? Well, it's neither. You see, the goal is to create more debt. Thousands of government-sponsored ways to waste money go on continually. Most make no sense, but they are never exposed for what they really are. Builders of billions for the bankers and debts for the people. Now, these so-called economic experts write syndicated columns in hundreds of newspapers. Have you noticed that? Well, we'll come back and take a look at these gurus that write all these papers and give us all these reports when we come back. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives and can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's 417-273-4967. And the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website georgegordon.org, or you can call direct 417-273-4967. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Now, there are economic experts, and they permeate our colleges and universities. There are economists, and they write articles for USA Today, and these experts are on CNN and PBS, and they tell us to buy stocks, and they put on special programs like Wall Street Week to encourage us to buy stocks and bonds. In other words, to squander our money on these things called investments. They call that investing. Giving your money to a stranger is called investing. I call that nonsense. There's nobody in the world that can handle my money as well as I can. I have never been happy with the way other people have managed or handled my money. And I've never met a senator or a politician, a representative, an insurance agent, or anybody else that could handle my money as well as I could. And if you think that these people in Washington, that these representatives and senators who have spent you into bankruptcy can handle your money better than you can, you are really incompetent. I mean, that's just where reality is located, isn't it? Now, these so-called economic experts write syndicated columns in hundreds of newspapers craftily designed and made to prevent the people from learning the simple truth about the money system. Commentators on radio and TV, preachers, educators, and politicians, they blame the people as wasteful, lazy, or spendthrift, and blame the workers and consumers for the increase in debts and the inflation of prices. Now, these economists, these phony blowhards, know full well that the cause is the debt money system itself. And our people are literally drowned in charges, countercharges, designed to confuse them and to keep them from understanding the unconstitutional and evil money system that is so efficiently and silently robbing the farmers and workers and businessmen of the fruits of their labors and of their freedoms. And then when some few patriotic people or organizations who know the truth begin to expose them or try to stop any of their mad schemes, they are ridiculed and then smeared in the press as being right-wing extremists, super patriots, ultra-rightists, bigots, racists, and fascists, and then the crowning glory, anti-Semitic. Any name is used which will cause them to shut up, or will at least stop other people from listening to the warning that they're giving. Articles and books such as you are now reading are kept out of schools, out of libraries, and out of bookstores. We're not interested in free speech and debate. We're interested rather in stifling free speech and eliminating any debate over money. And some who are especially vocal in their exposure of the treason against our people are harassed by government agencies such as the EPA or OSHA or the IRS and other government agents and agencies, which caused them financial loss or bankruptcy. Using these above methods, they have been completely successful in preventing most Americans from learning the things that you're reading in this pamphlet. However, in spite of all of their control of information, they realize that many citizens are learning the truth. Therefore, to prevent violence or armed resistance to their plunder of America, they plan to register all firearms and then eventually to disarm all of the citizens. They have to eliminate the guns because those guns in the hands of the people are dangerous to government, police, and the army. So, it's my position that I should go out and tell all the people that want to listen, the almost hidden conspirators in politics, religion, education, entertainment, and news media are working for a banker-owned United States in a banker-owned world under a banker-owned world government. Now, love of country, compassion for your race, or education, entertainment, or the America's greatest problem for our generation is not suffered under the yoke as the coming generations are going to suffer. Usury and taxes will continue to take a larger and larger part of the annual earnings of the people and put them into the pockets of the bankers and their political agents. Increasing government regulations, and the size and scope of government will prevent citizen protest and opposition to this ultimate control. Now, is it possible that your grandchildren will own neither home nor car, but will live in government-owned apartments, and then ride in government-owned buses, government-owned trains, government-owned airplanes, government-owned everything, and be allowed to keep just enough of their earnings to buy a minimum of food and clothing while their rulers wallow in luxury? Think about that. Now, America will not shake off her banker-controlled dictatorship as long as the people are ignorant of the hidden controllers. International financiers who control most of the governments of the world and most sources of information seem to have us completely within their grasp. They are afraid of only one thing, and that is an awakened patriotic citizenry, armed with the truth and with a trust and a fear of God Almighty for deliverance. Now, in this pamphlet, I have given you the truth about their iniquitous system, Now, what you do with it is up to you. That's your business. The fear of man brings a snare, but also puts his trust, or whoso rather puts his trust in the eternal shall be safe. Proverbs 29:25. Now, have you heard of the story about auditing the Federal Reserve? Well, listen to this. The Federal Reserve has never been audited by the government since it took over our money and credit system back in 1913. In 1975, a bill was introduced. It was House Resolution 4316 to require an audit. It was introduced into Congress to audit the Federal Reserve System. Well, during the April 1975 hearings, this author submitted a statement favoring the audit, as did many others. It's reprinted on the next two pages. I delivered that, this is Sheldon Emery speaking now, I delivered that to the Monetary Policy, it was the Subcommittee on Domestic Monetary Policy of the Committee on Banking, Currency, and Housing, House of Representatives. Now let me tell you a little something. You know, the Federal Reserve is organized as an eleemosynary trust. The Federal Reserve System, eleemosynary trust. That's a religious institution. And eleemosynary trusts are beyond the scope of an audit. You can't audit the thing. Now there's a solution to this Federal Reserve insanity here, and it's to stop participating. Stop doing business with them. Now, I'm just one person. I stopped doing business with them. And I ask my students when they come in, I say, do any of you people here do business with the Mafia or the Cosa Nostra, Murder Incorporated? And they look at you like, what are you, some kind of nut? And I say, well, then that's good, because when you do business with these criminal institutions and organizations, it'll probably come back and bite you. How many of you do business with OSHA, the EPA, the IRS, the State Tax Commission, or any other government agents, state or local? And they'll look at you and raise their hands and say, well, of course, we have to register our cars, and we have to pay taxes, and we have to have jobs, and we get our jobs from job service, and so on. And I said, now, government is a criminal institution. Government has imposed upon the American people the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Number 2 calls for a heavy progressive income tax. Number 5, a central bank. Number 8, Social Security. I could go on. Now, you know the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto calls for free education for all children in public school. Public schools cost in excess of $7,000 per student per year to educate. Private schools cost about half that, $3,000 a year. And a homeschool done on computer, which is what we do here, a computerized homeschool, costs less than $600 a year to educate a student. And the results that you get are, if they're homeschooled, they score at the 86th percentile. If they're private school, they're 80th percentile. If they're public school, they're at the 50th percentile. And if they're in an inner city public school, they average the 28th percentile. So when you educate a child and spend more than $7,000 a year, you can have the dumbest kid that money can buy, 28th percentile. If you spend a little less money and you educate him at just the national average of $7,000 per student, at the national average, he'll score at the 50th percentile. That's the second most expensive way to dumb down your kid. If you send him to private school and spend $2,500 or $3,000 a year, he'll score at the 80th percentile. And if you spend about one-tenth the amount of money, you can educate him at home and he'll be the smartest kid, scoring at the 86th percentile. Now, doesn't that tell you, doesn't your common sense tell you that government education costs the most and produces the poorest results? Why would you want to buy something like that? It's beyond me. Now, President James A. Garfield made a couple of observations. Gar- Garfield made this observation when he said, "Whoever controls the volume of money in any country is absolute master of all industry and commerce." Horace Greeley said that while boasting of our noble deeds, we are careful to conceal the ugly fact that by an iniquitous money system we have nationalized a system of oppression, which, though more refined, is not less cruel than the old system of chattel slavery. Thomas Edison made this observation. He said, "People who will not turn a shovel full of dirt on the project," he was speaking of the Muscle Shoals Dam, "nor contribute a pound of material will collect more money from the United States than will the people who supply all of the material and do all of the work. This is the terrible thing about interest. But here is the point. If the nation can issue a dollar bond, it can issue a dollar bill. The element that makes the bond good makes the bill good also. The difference between the bond and the bill is that the bond lets the money broker collect twice the amount of the bond and an additional 20%, whereas the currency, the honest sort provided by the Constitution, pays nobody but those who contribute in some useful way. It is absurd to say our country can issue bonds and cannot issue currency. Both are promises to pay, but one fattens the usurer and the other helps the people. If the currency issued by the people were so good or was no good, then the bonds would not be any good either. It is a terrible situation when the government, to ensure the national wealth, must go into debt and submit to ruinous interest charges at the hands of men who control the fictitious value of gold. Interest is the invention of Satan." Now, Thomas Edison only went to the third grade. He didn't have a degree after his name, but he understood money. He understood bonds and bills. I'm not sure that most Americans do. And that's why I suggest that it's time for you to stop supporting your own destruction. You can stop. We're not going to save America. America's already toast. But you can save yourself out of it. It just takes a little work on your part. President Woodrow Wilson said that a great industrial nation is controlled by its system of credit. Our system of credit is concentrated. The growth of the nation and all of our activities are in the hands of a few men. We have come to be one of the worst ruled, one of the most completely controlled and dominated governments in the world. No longer a government of free opinion, no longer a government by conviction and vote of the majority, but a government by the opinion and duress of small groups of dominant men. And just before he died, this same Woodrow Wilson is reported to have stated to friends that he had been deceived and that "I have betrayed my country." He referred to the Federal Reserve Act passed during his presidency in 1913. Sir Josiah Stamp, president of the Bank of England in the 1920s, the second richest man in Britain, said, "Banking was conceived in iniquity and was born in sin. The bankers own the earth. Now you take it away from them, but leave them the power to create deposits, and with the flick of a pen, they will create enough deposits to buy it all back again. However, if you take it away from them, and all of the great fortunes like mine will disappear, and they ought to disappear, for this would be a happier and better world to live in. But if you wish to remain the slaves of bankers and pay the cost of your own slavery, let them continue to create deposits." Now, Sir Josiah Stamp was a British banker. Now, listen to this. Listed below are the individuals, organizations, and publications that control, rather completely, what you know or do not know. So read the list and see if any of them since 1920 have told you any of these simple truths about our iniquitous debt usury economic system, which you have read in this little booklet. Listen to this. How about any presidents or vice presidents or presidential candidates? Have they told you any of this? Cabinet members, U.S. judges, or other appointed U.S. officials, have you heard it from them? How about any U.S. senator or representative except Robert LaFolliette, Charles Binderup, Charles Lindbergh, and Lewis McFadden, Wright Patman, or John Rarick, all of them now dead, by the way. How about any state governors or members of state legislatures, or the Republican Party, or the Democratic Party, the Communist Party, the Socialist Workers Party, other political parties, the League of Women Voters, or other so-called voter information groups? Have you heard any of this information that you've heard here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review? Did you hear it from any news sources such as Associated Press, UPI, Reuters, any large daily newspaper or newspaper columnist, Dan Rather? How about radio or TV networks such as ABC, NBC, CBS? How about radio or television newsmen or news commentators? News magazines like Time, Life, Newsweek, Look, U.S. News and World Report, People magazine. Any of those people shed any light on this for you? Did you read it there? How about any other widely circulated magazines? How about books sold on the newsstands and bookstores or Book of the Month Club or any other book clubs? Did you see it in the movies? Did you see it on stage or other entertainment? Although they often attack politics, religion, or Christian society, they never expose the money system. Have you noticed that? How about universities or college professors? Have any of them explained the money system to you? How about any elementary, high school, or college textbooks? Any other educator or educational organization such as the National Education Association, the PTA, or any similar organizations, the AFL, CIO, Teamsters, United Mine Workers, farm organizations like the Farmers Union or Farm Bureau, the NFO, United Farm Workers, anybody? How about some business organizations such as the National Association of Manufacturers or the Better Business Bureau, the Chamber of Commerce? Any business or trade publications, have they shed a word? Have they put any light on this banking fraud? How about medical and scientific or professional organizations such as the AMA, civic or fraternal organizations like the Rotary or the Elks, the Lions, Moose, or Eagles? How about veterans organizations like the American Legion or the Veterans of Foreign Wars? How about the hundreds of civil rights, student, women's lib, and similar protest organizations or publications? They protest about racism, atomic weapons, war, pollution, and scores of other supposed wrongs, but never, never, never do these institutions or organizations or protesters expose or even object to the robbery of the people by the billionaire bankers. Have any of the orders like the Masonic Order, lodges or publications, Knights of Columbus, any Catholic pope, bishop or priest, any Jewish rabbis? How about the World Council of Churches or the National Council of Churches? Any denominational Protestant ministers or church? Have you ever heard it from the Mormons or Jehovah's Witnesses or Christian Science or any similar charismatic or Pentecostal ministers or churches? How about religious magazines or publishing houses or bookstores? How about your own minister or preacher? How about anybody? Has anybody ever told you before that you're being screwed, blued, and tattooed by government and the bankers in our money system? Well, we got to cut it off right here. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law and science. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, I'm out of time. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing. So until then, good night, friends.